Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Are you frustrated by your typical hunting and fishing magazines? Are you tired of reading content meant for guys up north or in the Midwest? Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't hunt and fish in your home state. Pick up a Great Days Outdoors magazine subscription and become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors magazine can be found at your local Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, or you can save and buy online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. Hey folks, got a quick announcement. AFTCO has a new promotion for all Great Days Outdoors Podcast Network listeners. They are now offering a camo sunglasses cleaner cloth with any purchase of AFTCO products. We've become very fond of their hooded sun protection shirts as well as their Seiko fluorocarbon here at Great Days Outdoors. All that you have to do to get your coupon code is text ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, that's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. Alrighty guys, welcome back to another episode. This time we're tuning in with Clayton Batts over on the Chattahoochee River System. Clayton, what's going on the Hooch?
Oh, not much. We've been getting this warm weather and some rain coming down. Fish are moving up shallow. It's going to be a good time next 2 or 3 weeks to come fish and have a chance at catching a real giant.
That's what I like to hear. I know down here it's been warming up too. I've been hitting some of the creeks and the ponds by my house, taking my daughter fishing. And yesterday was the first day I got on a really good topwater bite in the morning, man. Like I hit a little local pond and I literally caught fish on every cast. And every year I forget, I don't know about you, but the first duck or the first deer I shoot every year or the first good topwater bite I get on, it's like, man, I've missed that. Like I'd forgotten how much fun that was. So it's an exciting time of the year for sure. What's it look like? Where are you catching them? Like you talked about catching big fish. Are they shallow? Are they deep? How's that looking?
Yeah, we've been getting a bunch of rain over here. We had 2 or 3 weeks ago, we got like 6 inches of rain and hadn't had a time to really clear up since then. They're shallow right now. It's just fun power fishing. There's no scoping involved. I mean, it's just straight up just 65-pound braid, a swim jig, and get after it.
Yeah, that's my type of fishing. What swim jig you like?
I like a dirty jigs one. I've thrown about every other one, and I'm not going to say fortunate enough, but I kind of throw with what I like throwing the most. I fish professionally, but if I'm not going to throw somebody's swim jig or somebody's bait that I don't believe in, and I won't say yes to them, I've turned down some deals, and it's cost me some change, but if I don't have confidence and I don't believe in somebody's bait, then I'm not going to do a deal with them. That's the reason, like hooks and everything, I'll be honest with everybody about what I throw. My favorite swim jig, it is a dirty jig swim jig.
Yeah, dirty jigs. I haven't heard of those. What makes those different? Why you like them so much?
The main thing I look for in a swim jig, the number one thing is the hook. The number two thing is the head. Because you'll get a bunch of them that whenever you hit any kind of wood or anything, they'll get off tilt and they'll roll over and they'll get hung. And that dirty jig just does a real good job coming through the grass, coming through wood. It's an extremely versatile jig to swim around.
That sounds like something I need. I know down here if you're not throwing up in wood, if you're not getting hung up, you're not fishing. But it'd be nice to get hung up a little bit less. So.
Yeah, and I'll take people out in the boat, and they'll have some other brand one on there, and they'll be getting hung up. And I'll take them back up to Shawala Marina, and I'll get them a dirty jig just to save us time.
Is there a particular color that you like this time of year?
I keep my swim jigs pretty simple throughout the whole year. I'm throwing some form of white, some form of black and blue, and some bluegill pattern. Right now, I'm sticking mainly with my whites and my black and blues. And then in the summertime, I'll get in more to the bluegill.
What do you think right now, this time of the year, what kind of forage are you emulating with that? What are they eating up shallow right now?
Oh, there's shad up there, crawfish. But the main thing, I'm imitating shad. They're up there. They're getting ready to spawn and do their deal up there. They're kind of feeding up. They're staging. Some females, they're already up there, and they will be on bed the next week. Especially the next full moon, I'll look for a gigantic wave to come up, and that could probably be one of the best fishing of the whole year. But right now, they're just shallow. It's deep out there, deep. It's muddy. They can't see. They've moved up. they're feeding just like they would offshore, and it's fun. But I tell everybody that right now, this whole month in February and March, we're not going to get as many bites fishing up there on the hill fishing shallow, but you got a chance of catching some really grown ones and having a real fun day.
What's your best tip for when you do hook into a big bass? I know you do a lot more fishing than I do, more than most of the listeners. And I know any time I hook into a really big bass, there's always that moment where you go, oh, crap. Like, I know I'm going to screw this up. Like, this is going to be the time. Like, I didn't really dress that knot right, or, you know, wish I'd have swapped out that leader after the last two or three fish. Like, or just, I know I'm a horse him too much or not enough. Where do you see most people lose a big fish? I think that's interesting to hear people's opinions on. Is it gear failures or a mess up?
Not fishing with the right equipment. It's the number one. Every rod is like a toolbox. You can't go fix everything with a hammer. Just like you can't fix everything with a screwdriver. You can't throw a swim jig up in the grass you're throwing it in dead grass and 1 to 3 feet of water. You can't throw it on a medium light rod. You're going to miss them. They're going to get down that grass. They're going to waller, and they're going to come off. Equipment is the number one thing that I see with people losing big fish, and they don't know why. And it's equipment. Not throwing the right bait on the right rod, not using the right speed reel, that's the number one thing where I see where they're missing them.
It's definitely real when they're up in weeds, up in grass, up in algae, up in lily pads. It's like you said, it's surprising how quick they can bury themselves and shake off. Yeah, it happens. I lose fish regularly, and then they just get up in a grass mat, and that's it. That's all she wrote. You got pressure, and then you've quit feeling the fish, and you just feel heavy pressure. And by the time you get it jerked loose, it's just a hook full of junk. No fish no more. It's always sad.
That's where the 65-pound braid comes in. And when you get a bite in that thick stuff, you want to get them out as quick as you can and get them out to open water.
There we go. Well, you was talking about, you know, how there had been some rain. And I know we've been having, you know, it's been a weird year, like with the whole El Nino weather pattern and everything. And I know right now it's warm. I think this weekend we had some days down here where I'm at that got up into the 80s. And, you know, I've always been told winter ain't over till after Easter. You're going to get that one cold front that'll come through and kill your tomatoes. So this time of the year, the weather's changing a lot. The water level's changing a whole lot. My water down here is kind of going up and down right now. We're a little bit on the high side, but yesterday it was actually low, but muddy, you know, moving out fast. Like, there's a lot going on. With it being so dynamic this time of the year, like, the fishing's great, but air temperature's changing, water levels are fluctuating a whole lot, fish are on the move. What's your checklist, like, before you go out on a fishing trip? Do you have kind of a flow chart that you're looking at when you're checking conditions that you kind of keep track of and tell you, you know, how you're going to fish, when you're going to fish, where you're going to fish on any given day?
I do on Eufaula. I got an app on my phone. For some reason, this app will not work on an iPhone, but I have an Android and it pulls up. Like, I just pulled it up while you were talking just then. The water level right now is 189.5, and they're pulling 26,000. So they're sucking the bottom out of it. But whenever I put the boat in the water, I got the dock. So, I mean, I kind of know where to go look and on seawalls. The lake right now is high. It's muddy. They're on the bank. If it's low and clear, then they're out there offshore. I mean, that's the way I approach Eufaula. It's muddy bank, clear offshore. And it's muddy right now, so I'm on the bank. Now, we were just kind of discussing this. Now, you might go to one part of the lake, especially down the south end around Sandy and all that stuff, and it's clear. That's going to be a totally different pattern than if you're up the lake and the whole lake's muddy. You'll be able to fish offshore in that clear stuff, where up the lake where it's muddy, you won't be able to fish offshore.
Sure. Is there anything, so like, do you put most of your importance on clarity, or is it like air temperature, water temperature, time of the year, phase of the moon? Like, do you have kind of in your mind like a rough ranking of which factors are the most important to you?
When you follow, the number one factor is water level. Absolutely. There's no question about it. I've had a bunch of clients that I've taken at a fish tournaments, and they'll go out with me the week before, and we'll go catch them shallow. I mean, catch them. They'll come back the next week, go fish a tournament, and they can't get up there to the stuff. So the water level on Eufaula, that is number one. Number two would be water clarity. And then number three is going to be the temperature to me.
Is for your temperature, are you looking for Stable temperatures, a change? Are you looking for cool, warm? What are you looking for this time of the year for temperature? What puts a smile on your face?
Right now, I'm looking for the warmest water that I can find.
Really?
And most of the time, that's going to be on the south end of the lake. That's where they spawn first. And then they'll spawn to kind of move up the lake. But around Sandy Branch, Sandy Creek, that's obviously the warmest water on the lake first. And I've seen them spawn a month later up north compared to what they do down south. And it's crazy. I mean, you're a 30-minute, 20-minute boat ride, but it'll make that big of a difference down there.
What's your hypothesis on why there's such a drastic difference in temperature in that short of a span? Is it that the water downstream is just stiller and you've got colder water coming in from the north, or?
Yes, you follow us kind of right on that line where it's just warmer weather down south in the lake right now. I know it seems weird with it being that short of a distance, but it's just warmer down there. It stays warmer down there. It's closer to Seminole, and I know they're spawning like crazy on Seminole right now, or getting ready to. And Seminole from the south in the lake is not real far, but from the north in the lake, it's another 45 minutes.
Yeah, I can see that. That makes sense. And you're kind of like Lake Eufaula is, I mean, I guess not quite, but like it's kind of, I don't know where exactly the fall line runs through there, but you're right. Like the weather can get really different. Like on the Alabama side where I'm at, like the weather up around Auburn can be a lot different from the weather that you have down around like Union Springs. I see what you're saying about that line. You do kind of have a geographic difference, I guess. So you'd say it's
It
mostly,
just
you
has
think
me
just,
sitting right on it.
yeah. You think it just comes down to weather more than it comes down to influx from upstream?
Yeah, and the south end of the lake, kind of where you go with the influx, the south end of the lake is a little bit more stable. It don't have quite as many creeks that run in. It don't have the river that runs in, obviously. There's a couple of bigger spawning areas down there that shallower water will warm up quicker. Because up north, a bunch of our spawning areas, they have silted in where you can't get a boat back there, and a fish definitely can't get back there. It's too thick. It's been grown up with reeds and silted in. And those bays, they spawn more up there on the river now, kind of just in little nooks, and got a lot on the main river, to be honest with you, on sandbars, just because their spawning habitat has been depleted.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Well, that's you've got me thinking now about if there's other lakes that have big differences in temperature like that. I'm gonna have to check with some of their other guides because a month worth of difference in the spawn is crazy to me.
Yeah, I've seen a month, I've seen a week. It just depends.
What else? I know that that's determining spawn is kind of one of those things that seems like one part, biology and science, and then one part just kind of black magic. And you hear a lot of different things on it. You mentioned earlier talking about like your moon phase. Is that something I hear a lot of guys who swear up and down that like especially like here where we're at, like bluegill and crappie, that I think it's the like they're looking for that full moon, like the day after a full moon or something like that, I think is what I've heard a lot of the guys say down here. Like you get in April, like the full moon in April is when bluegill spawn and go on bed, and that's people will take off work and stuff like that. Have you noticed a trend like that?
And they do spawn better on that new moon and full moon, but it's a wild animal. I mean, any way you look at it, it's like a deer to me. They know when they have to spawn. It's like a deer. They know when they've got to go in a rut and when they got to breed. And to me, I mean, 1st of November around me with a deer, I don't care if it's 30 degrees or if it's 100 degrees, they're going to be chasing. And they just know it by the length of days. And a bass knows it by the day's lengthening that it's time to go spawn. And to me, the length of days is one of the number one factors along with the moon.
I've heard a lot of that too. That seems to be the new wave. It seems like there's people now that place a lot more emphasis on the photo period than they do on the lunar cycle. It seems like lunar cycles, it seems like they've been struggling to prove, at least when you go to the universities and stuff like that, like universities and the state departments, that's what I keep hearing, whether it's the rut or spawn, that it comes down to, photo period. And then also, obviously with fish are cold blooded, so temperature makes a big difference, But I hear less and
I've
less on
always just believed the day is getting longer. That it got me really intrigued with it with deer. I mean, obviously, we talk, I hunt a lot. And I mean, one of the biggest deer I ever killed was 1st of November. It was 93 degrees, and there was 6 bucks out in the field chasing one doe. I mean, they know.
Yeah. Down here, they definitely, there's something for those 10 days that they give us in February in the zone that I'm at. I feel like, and this is, we're getting off the fishing report, but I feel like they're going to go into rut at the same time every year, but whether you see them during the daytime comes down to temperature, I think. I feel like I see more deer when it's cold, but you'll see, like you're saying, like the scrapes show up in the same time in the woods every year. Like that's very predictable for me. Like we start getting scrapes here, usually heavy right after Christmas. New Year's, you get down with the holidays, and down here where I'm at on the coast, like you start looking for scrapes and they pop up every year. And then how cold it is determines how successful you are when you're hunting in those areas. It's definitely interesting. I've never noticed much of an impact on the moon. I'm a, fishing, I like temperature, looking for steady, stable temperatures. And my personal rule of thumb is, you're looking for room temperature. Or for me anyway, if I'm gonna do shallow water fishing, like I feel like fish like about that 70-degree range is what I've always had the best luck with. And if it's real hot, if the water temperature's up in the 80s or the 90s, and you want to do shallow fishing, go find cool water and vice versa, in the spring. So it's interesting to hear other people's theories, and I think it definitely, I enjoy talking with you because I feel like if you hunt and fish, that that's just one more chance to kind of pay attention to what the weather's doing and how that impacts animal movement. So.
And one thing I love about it is no, we have all these theories and everything. They're, like I said, they're wild. There's still no guarantee.
That's it. That's it. They know when you don't. And that's part of what makes it fun. That's what I've had old guy tell me. That's what makes it fishing and not catching.
That's right, but I enjoy the catching.
That's it. That's it. Well, the fishing's good and everything, and going out there and enjoying the scenery and the weather and all that. We all tell ourselves little white lies about how, it's really not about the fish that you catch. But if you're out there with a hook in your hand, it's about the fish a little bit. So.
That's right.
Well, Clayton, I always enjoy talking to you. If folks are looking to book a trip with you, where's a good place to get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can look me up on Facebook, Lake Eufaula Fishing Guy Clayton Batts, or give me a call, 334-310-8338. I'm booked about the next week and a half. After that, though, I'm home until mid-April from fishing tournaments. So I'll be booking more trips. And if you want a chance to come catch a big one, if it clears up a little bit, this is also my favorite time to get out there and throw a big plug and crank ledges. If it clears up a little bit, I'll be out there doing that.
There we go, guys. Y'all definitely go check him out. And Clayton, as always, I enjoy having you on the show, sir.
Appreciate it.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rigs, using traditional scent strips for pompano, or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Family-owned and operated in St. Augustine, Florida, they pride themselves on making reliably consistent fishing products for anglers of all ages all around the world. Fish Bites baits and lures are made with pride in the Sunshine State here in USA. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com. All righty, guys, for our next guest, we got Steve Graziano. Steve actually was just telling me a little bit about the fishing trip that he went on. How'd y'all do this morning?
We did pretty good. We didn't really catch any giants. I think our biggest one was about four. We had another one about three, and we caught a lot of 2-pounders and stuff like that. But I hadn't been down here just in a long time. I've been up at West Point the last few days doing the camera boat thing, hauling the camera people around for the Invitational Tackle Warehouse. I hadn't been down here lately, so I wanted to get down here and check the water out from all the rain and stuff. But we had a good trip. The water's in good shape. We put in at Lake Point, and these fish have pulled up. We found 63 degree temp water, and I think in one place it was 64. So these fish have pulled up. Some of them are doing their business, and others are on their way. So it's fun time of the year.
It's definitely an exciting time of the year, and I know that spawn happens at a little bit different times of the year on different bodies of water or according to different anglers. Like some people seem to get on the spawn quicker than others. It's kind of like the deer rut. People you'll talk one guy who says, "Oh man, they're rutting right now," and then you'll talk to somebody else who says, "Well, my property, they ain't quite there yet." It varies depending, I guess, on the spots that and what you're checking. But yeah, I've noticed down here, man, it's really starting to warm up, and it's getting to be I love winter. I love duck hunting, deer hunting, doing all the cold weather stuff, sitting around the campfire. But man, I broke out my shorts for the first time yesterday in a
Well, trust me, we went to shorts too. We were in the shorts, I guarantee you.
That's
And
it.
I like
That's
to froze to death when I was up there at West Point last week. It was terrible, especially Friday. It was rough, boy.
There's
But anyway, in historically over the years, when you see the trees budding out and some of these dogwoods and all this stuff, the trees budding out and the flower and the pollen start, I mean, that's when it's on, and pretty much.
Yeah, that's always my indicator is you get them first couple of days where you feel like breaking out shorts, and then you look in your yard and where the red maples start blooming. That's a little bit too early still, but then here in my yard, I got a bunch of violets, and that's by the time I start paying attention. And by the time down here, by the time the jasmine starts blooming, like you need to go, like knock off work early, cancel plans, like start going.
Well, one thing is, when we think that they want to do their business, isn't necessarily always so. Because, when we get the warming trend and we think that they're all, pulled up and all that kind of stuff, it's in our mind, but they're gonna do their business when they want to, and you can't force them. It's just different parts of this lake, for example, turn on quicker, and I think that happens in a lot of lakes. Certain areas will have the bedding part, spawning part happen before, other parts, and so there's still some fish out offshore. In these ditches and stuff, they're working their way in, and a lot of these fish gonna be around the bait, and we're still looking for bait, even though we're fishing, right there off the grass line or whatever, like we did today. We was using cinkos, chatterbaits, swim jig, caught a lot on swim jig today, but the cinko was in play also, so and. It can be really good. The only thing I wanted to throw today and I didn't do it was the swimming worm. I was telling my client today that I didn't have my swimming worms with me, and I thought a lot of times that swimming worm can be really good this time of year.
Now your swimming worm, you talking about just like a big plastic worm that has kind of like the tail on it, right?
Right, like a ultravibe worm.
Gotcha.
Zoom makes them, a lot of companies make them, Big Bite, and you put you a small 1/4 ounce lead in front and throw it up there and work it through the grass. Sometimes a swim jig, when you're throwing it through the grass, will pick up more, grass and debris and everything, and you don't really have a clean cast. But you throw that swimming worm in there, swim it back, and it'll slither through there. You know what I mean? And you don't waste your cast. Plus the fact that sometimes the fish really want that swimming worm. I mean, they want it over the swim jig, actually. I've had it happen.
Yeah, I used to fish a lot of soft plastics like that, and yeah, it's hard to beat if you really want something weedless. It's hard to beat a worm if you rig it right. Well, I'll learn to speak English one day, but yeah, they're pretty weedless, and I used to like them.
Yeah, back in the early 80s, I lived in Bainbridge and I fished Lake Seminole a lot. And back then, they were throwing the swimming worms this time of year. I mean, I remember it quite well. And I think the swimming worm back then, the swim jig wasn't even part of in the early 80s. Not so sure the swim jig was in play back then. It happened a little later, but if he wasn't throwing the swimming worm, there was one that they had. I was trying to think. I can't think right now what it was, but it was unreal what you could catch, when they first pull up and stuff. Because it's a great time to fish, and even if you're a novice, you can catch fish.
Yeah, speaking of a novice, Lake Seminole, anytime I hear about them Florida lakes, I always think I know that's a place where they do like the big shiners for live bass. Was that a thing back then?
Well, not so much in Seminole. It was in Florida. Okeechobee, you got a lot of guys that'll do the shiner thing and other lakes down there. I don't ever remember the shiner deal being popular on Seminole because, I mean, you could really catch them pretty good with artificial bait.
Yeah, I know. We're gonna be doing an article about that, about live shiner fishing. It's crazy. You see some of them lakes down there, some of the bass that they pull out of there. And I got to doing deep dives into the the world record fish and different state records. And I think it's California actually that holds like the all time world record bass. And he was something ridiculous.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they won't turn down a shiner. They won't turn down a shiner if it's swimming around there. That's the real deal.
Yeah, I think from what I was reading, you get there south in Florida, and people target big bass, just want to catch them any way they can catch them, because I think Florida has the most bass in the books that are over 8 pounds or something like that. Like, I don't think they hold the biggest
Right.
fish, but I think they're like far and away. It's like going to Illinois or Wisconsin or something like that for big deer, just as far as who's got the most Pope and Young bucks, bucks over 125 or whatever in the books. Florida's got a bunch of really big bass down there. Need to make my way down there one day next time my wife goes to Mickey Mouse Land.
Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, Mickey Mouse Land. I try not to go down there too far. It gets
Yeah.
weird.
I've been there before myself.
Florida gets weird for me the further south you go. I don't mind the panhandle that much, but you get too close to Orlando and it, I don't know, not my cup of tea. But the fishing's pretty good. Well, tell me what else? What else is going up on Lake Eufaula? What you looking for next to happen? What's the next big thing happening?
Well, there's some tournaments coming. Tomorrow I'm gonna come back down here. I've got a couple trips first of next week, and I'm gonna put in south tomorrow. The wind's not supposed to blow, so I'm gonna put in it at White Oak and fish below the causeway, or what we call the big lake down there. I wanna check out the watercolor and all that kind of stuff. So today we put in at Lake Point and went. We fished in the creek, Kalwicki Creek, and we went up the river, and we found some really clear water up there. With all this rain and everything, we kind of thought that it would be stained up pretty bad, but we found some really, really nice water. But a lot of the fish we caught was in stained water. Not muddy, but stained, just stained water. And so, a lot of the lake is fishable now. A lot of that mud that was here and the dark water has lifted. And so if we can just keep some of this rain away a little while, it'll really get good. It's good now. It's good now. But I'm gonna try down south.
With the rain and the weather this time of the year, like it seems like is trying to string together some warm days and trying to string together some dry days is what most people seem to be looking for, and that can be tough. I think I was looking at it, and this weekend down here, the high is supposed to be 64 or something like that. So the cool snap will come back in here a little bit. But we had last week, it seemed like we had a good spell where we had some real good daytime temperatures and it dried up and everything cleared out a little bit. I know that's the game this time of the year is trying to catch the weather right for a few days in a row.
Yeah, and really, over the years, it's these cold nights that'll really hit these fish in the head, because if you it's not necessarily how hot it gets during the day, but you get these cold nights where it's like 30 degrees, or high 30s, and then it comes up to 70. Well, your water temperature's just not gonna come right on up. But when you got like 50-degree nights like we've had lately, and then it gets up in the 70s, or like tomorrow's supposed to be in 78. I mean, the water temperature tomorrow is going to be 65 or 66, easy. I mean, it's going, and so it's a great time to get out and fish right now. We saw a lot of crappie fishermen down here today putting in. I didn't get a chance to talk to them, but they may have got on them pretty good.
Yeah, they're starting reports are starting to trickle in. People starting to catch them down here and up on the Tennessee River and out on Eufaula and West Point and all that is starting to everything's starting to warm up, man. I've
Yeah.
just got off the phone with a guy over from Mississippi who was out this morning listening for turkeys to gobble. It's spring is here. It's a good time to be alive. There's a lot going on.
Yes, sir. I mean, it's great.
Absolutely. Well, with everything kind of warming up, people getting in the mood to go fishing. I figured I'd ask you because we'd talked earlier about maybe me getting up there making a trip with you. And I've Been on a couple guided trips, but I figured it'd be good maybe to refresh my memory and maybe help some people out who may be looking at booking trips. I know you've been guiding for a really long time, and I know I've worked in different industries, and it doesn't matter what industry you're in, you work with clients or you work with customers, and you got good ones and you got bad ones. Like I used to work in a past life, I was an academic advisor, and you had some students who were real, teachable. They were open. They'd ask you a question. They'd listen to the answer. And those were my favorite students. We'd have people who were scared to go back to school, and it'd be like, look, you're doing great. You're asking the right questions. You've got the right mindset. You'll do great. And then you had some students, and you worked with them, and you were happy to help them. You did what you can. But it was just like, like I don't know. Like I don't have good feelings about what it's going to look like in 4 years.
Right.
So taking people fishing, I know that's an interesting job because you kind of mix business with pleasure. And I've talked with people who've burned out on it, duck hunting guides and stuff like that. And I've talked with people who've done it for decades and couldn't imagine doing anything different. But what, from your point of view, like from the captain's seat, what makes a good guest and what makes a bad guest? What makes you think, man, I hope that guy comes back next year, or man, I'm glad that trip's over with?
Well, when you get through, when you pull the boat out, you know if you've had a good trip or not. But sometimes, not all the time, you'll get a client that is really not that familiar with what we're trying to do. And so what I always do is when they get in the boat, I'll go ahead and tell them what we're trying to do. And a lot of times I'll fish offshore. Of course, now I'm on the bank a lot. We mixed a little of it in today offshore. But bottom line is, what I have happened that really just, I'm not going to say it irritates me is that they don't get what I'm trying to say. Humans just have, when they get a bite, they just want to set the hook, A lot of the clients have fished off the bank or fished, close to the bank or whatever from the boat. So when you get offshore, a lot of times the fish want to run towards the boat. So, and I just have to try and get them to not bow the rod before they actually feel the fish on. Because what they'll do is they'll set the hook and there'll be a bow in the line and they'll lose the fish. So, if as many bites as they get, sometimes they don't have the benefit of the fish in the boat. You follow me? And that's the one thing that I wish some of them would dial in quicker, if you know what I mean. And sometimes I have to keep repeating myself. And they'll get frustrated. They'll miss a fish and they get irritated. You know what I mean? It's almost entertaining to me, but when they get it, when they get, tightening the line down before they set the hook, because a lot of these fish will just come towards the boat when you're fishing offshore. It's just doesn't matter what bait you're throwing. Now, we're talking about a worm, a jig, or Carolina rig, or something like that, drop shot type presentation. Now, if you're throwing a moving bait, most times you just keep, you set the hook and keep really got two treble hooks. But when you're throwing a Texas rig or something like that, you got one hook, basically. Most times when people leave, I mean, I've showed them something, that they weren't familiar with. And I wish that, all the clients would just get that. But it's tough to do because when they feel that fish hit, and they want to react right then. So they set the hook. So.
It's definitely something I emphasize with that because it's hard for me not to set the hook real quick. I think that's why I like topwater fishing so much because you can kind of get away with a you get away with a little bit quicker hook set. As soon as you hear the splash, you can set the hook. But there's some situations where you got to let them take it or stay calm and reel till you feel
Yeah,
pressure. And I'm,
like a frog.
yeah,
A
yeah.
frog, keep it a little man with the frog, or you gonna pull it out of his mouth.
Yeah,
But
that.
that's the thing that frustrates me, because I mean, and nobody's gonna catch all the fish that they you have you know, bit your line and or whatever your bait, you're not going to catch them all. But it frustrates me sometimes when they'll have a good one on, and man, they'll let you know too when they miss it. They're like, you know, it almost gets to where there's four letter words going around. You know,
that's it. Well,
they miss a 3, 4, 5, 6 pounder or something, and then the ones that you don't see, then they, you know, that really bothers them too, because they think it was a 10 pounder. You know what I mean?
The fish do get bigger when you don't see them. And the biggest fish is the fish that broke you off. Like a fish that broke you off, he gains 5 pounds.
Oh, I know it. I know it.
No, it sounds.
I had a little, you'll like this. I had a son and his dad, and I think the son was like, he was 15. He was probably in high school or something like that. Anyway, he set the hook and he missed it. And he was pretty good with run reel. And I was kind of teasing him. I looked back there. I think his name was David or something. I said, David. I said, and we never saw the fish. I said, David, you know how big that fish was, don't you? And his daddy was looking at me, and David looked at me. I don't know. It was a good fish. I said, that fish was 5 pounds. And he looked down at his shoes, man, looked at his daddy's, and then he looked at me and said, no, it wasn't. It was 7 pounds. he knew I was messing with him, you know. But anyway, funny. We have fun out there, and like I tell the clients, I'm in the entertainment business. You know what I mean? I'll tell them. I said, if I'm telling you jokes at 10 o'clock, then we're not having a good day. You know what I mean? So, but that doesn't happen often. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's you're right. Like I think that's I've known a lot of people who guided for a little bit, and they said that, you know, it's not just about knowing how to catch fish. It's about being personable. It's about, you know, just being an enjoyable person to spend the day on the water with, you know. Like I know a lot of guys who catch fish like they're going out of style, but you can fish with them for 4 hours and not hear 4 words out of them, you know. And that for me at least, that's a little bit weird, you know. Like I'm a bit of a talker. I know not everybody is, but I like to have a little conversation while we're fishing, you know.
Well, you know, I'm almost a part-time counselor because, I mean, you get out, you know, people are busy doing what they're doing and they hire a guide. You get out there, and especially if it's one-on-one, if it's two, you know, if you've got two people in the boat with you, but you get a single trip, and they want to talk about their family or what's bugging them or whatever. So I turn into not only a fishing guide, I turn into a counselor. I mean, they'll start talking about their family and their son or daughter that won't do right. I'll share some things that happen to me. And first thing you know, you're talking about, you know, everything. And I lift people up. I mean, I don't want to tell them suggestions that I wouldn't have done, you know, or, you know, you just, every trip is different, but I tell you, I can't tell you how many times it's gotten to be real personable.
You can definitely get into some pretty deep conversations with casual friends or new acquaintances out on a fishing boat. Something about being out there on that boat on that water will definitely get people to open up for sure.
Well, I had a trip a week or two ago, and older man and his buddy, they had met, I think, at a tailgate party 20 years ago, and we got to talking and everything. And I mean, after about, I think it was about 11 or 12 o'clock, he had told me something that, I mean, you don't know everybody's deal, but he had told me he had had open heart surgery 2 weeks before. And I'm going like, golly, you know, and it just, you know, you get things like that gets thrown at you, and you know, you don't know going in, but you know, it changed my verbiage to it, you know what I mean, and so forth. So it's just, you know, each trip is different.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would. It's definitely good too. We're glad that you're out there doing the work. We're glad that you're out there helping people catch fish and doing some stand-up comedy routines when you need to do it, and then playing free therapist when you need to. You're doing the Lord's work out there, guys.
Well, I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, but I would hate to go out with a guy that wouldn't talk much and, you know, beat his chest or whatever. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just want to be personable with people and try and help them learn the sport. You know, I get a lot of trips that folks just don't know that much about it and want to know, especially offshore or electronics or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's a learning experience.
I think that's something that sometimes people lose sight of is that, you know, it's not just about catching the fish. Like if you're paying for a guide, yeah, a lot of what you're paying for with a guided trip is to learn something and to have a good time, you know. And there's more to having a good time out on the water than just catching fish for sure.
Exactly. I mean, it's like I tell them, I'm in the entertainment business, and you know, if I can't make you smile or laugh or whatever, or get away from your full-time day job or whatever it is, then I haven't done my job. That's
There
the
we
way I
go.
look at it.
There we go.
It's just one of those deals. And you know, when I get home, I know if we've had a good trip. Most times, and then every once in a while, you'll have a trip that's tough. But this time of year, it won't happen because the fish are, they have pulled up and it's on. So it's just a good time to book a trip right now. If somebody's thinking about doing it, no better time than right now.
Well, if folks want to book a trip with you, where's a good place to hit you up at?
Well, I'm on Facebook, Graz's Guide Service, and I got a website, grazesguideservice.com. They can call me on my cell, 706-593-4192. And it's getting busy now. The phone's ringing a whole lot, and that's because folks are getting that spring fever.
That's it. I'm getting it myself. I'm looking forward to this weekend, getting to go out there and scratch the itch a little bit. Guys, if y'all looking for a trip, y'all be sure to check out Grize. And Grize, as always, I enjoy talking with you, sir.
Appreciate you having me.
This week's episode has been brought to you by Killer Doc. Most fishermen clean their fish on something like an unsightly old wooden table or the top of a cooler, somewhere that's not comfortable, not sanitary, and not attractive. Killer Dock makes the greatest fish cleaning stations known to mankind. They are built from marine-grade aluminum and ceramic-coated to protect them from the harsh salt environment. Killer Dock makes tables and canopies at several different sizes, so whatever you need on your dock, deck, or patio, they have a fish cleaning station for you. Check out killerdock.com to see more. Also by L&M Marine. L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoon boats, to bigger bay boat and offshore hybrids. L&M Marine LLC prides itself on its customer service and knows how important it is to be taken care of and to have someone you can trust. They are locally owned and regularly support the surrounding community. L&M Marine provides superior customer service and has an entire team that consists of professional sales members, finance experts, service technicians, and a knowledgeable parts and accessories staff to fully support you. Go visit their friendly, reliable, and experienced staff today. L&M Marine is located 6 miles north of I-10 at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama. You can also reach them by phone at 251-937-1380. Alrighty, guys, welcome back. This time we've got Richard Nicoletti with Cortland Line Company. He's here to talk to us about fly fishing lines, specifically warm water fly fishing lines. Richard, how you doing today?
Doing well, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was glad Peter Jordan put me in touch with you, and I was glad I know you got a busy schedule, so I was glad that we could carve out a little bit of time to meet today.
Absolutely.
Fill our listeners in a little bit. Tell me first of all, what do you fish for? What you like to fish for the most?
Yeah, so I'm located up in Syracuse, New York, which is 30 miles north of Cortland. In Cortland, New York is where our factory is, where everything happens. Our braiding machines, the fly line room, everything gets packaged up, labeled, welded loops, and everything gets shipped out of our hub. So I'm just 30 minutes north of that. And in central New York, we have a pretty diverse fishery. Very seasonal. So we don't really have one type of fishing that goes through the whole year. Springtime, we're typically targeting pre-spawn bass, trout fishing in some of our freeze zones. The summer months are typically spent primarily smallmouth fishing up on the St. Lawrence, Onondaga, Cayuga, Oneida, some really large bodies of water that have really healthy populations of both smallmouth and largemouth, world renowned. And then in the fall, we kind of transition more towards muskie pike fishing with the occasional lake run trout. Typically don't trout fish in the fall. We really let them just do their thing. We have some really awesome freestones, but the water gets really low all summer. So we typically just let them reset and then we start fishing for them again in the spring. But then winter comes around and typically a central New York winter is filled with at least 8 to 12 inches of ice. But the last 2 years has not been that way. So, you know, we're still just kind of just hanging around waiting for spring to come because there's really not a whole lot of good fishing going on right now. But yeah, we got it all. Walleye, smallmouth, largemouth, pike, muskie, trout, panfish, you name it.
Yeah, that sounds really diverse. I tell people down here, basically, you can sum it up with we got everything but trout in Alabama. Everything that you talked about, we don't quite have muskie. I think you got to get up to like the upper parts of the Tennessee River. I just found that out that they do have some muskie fishing up in Tennessee, actually. We don't quite get that this far south in Alabama, but everything else you were talking about, bass, largemouth, smallmouth, spotted, panfish, crappie, catfish, we got a little bit of everything. So what's your history with Cortland?
I started at Cortland when I was a sophomore in college. So I went to a small environmental school. That's called SUNY ESF. It's like kind of part of Syracuse, but it's like an individual state school in New York. And I got started with Cortland because we were running a fly fishing club there at the school. And we had a ridiculous amount of like 20, 30-year-old broken rods. And eventually, when I got kind of in the club members, like higher ups, I was like, guys, have we ever called them? So reached out to them, long story short, and became friends with the guys here and started part-time and then transitioned to full-time in 2019. Started in customer service for a few years and just been really, it's been really fun. Really enjoyed every minute of it. And now I am doing mainly sales, but I oversee the customer service department and help with product development.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit. I'm a new fly fisherman, and it seems like in general, like the history of it is kind of with trout. There's a lot of trout focused stuff down here. We don't have trout, but we have a lot of warm water species. What should people look for? Or I guess kind of just to start out with, what are people talking about when they talk about a warm water fly fishing line versus other types of fly fishing line?
Yeah. So like you mentioned, traditionally people think fly fishing, they think trout. And what comes with trout is cold water, cold air temps, unless you're out west in the summer fishing in tailwater, but typically cold. So what that means is the fly line has to be able to be straightened out and have like virtually like no memory for it to have a proper presentation. What I mean by that is the fly line itself is typically like soft. So in those cooler temps, it doesn't coil, it doesn't retain memory. But for warm water fishing, it's the complete opposite. Because you have warmer water temps, warmer air temps, if you match that with a soft line that you would use for trout fishing, what's going to happen is the line's going to get soft and sticky and gummy. And then as an angler, you'll notice. So if you like, you know, say you took like one of our supple lines, like the classic 444 peach, and you wanted to go fish that in 90 degree weather down in Alabama, you'll be very frustrated as you're struggling to cast 30, 40 feet. The PVC, the coating of the line is not rated for those temperatures and just becomes like basically like wet spaghetti. So a warm water fly line is typically a stiffer line that can handle that heat. So it's a fine balance of stiffness, which allows you to, you know, keep a line in the heat that's quick shooting. It doesn't get hung up in the guides and there's like virtually no memory. So it's really just kind of pairing the situational use. But as like a new angler into fly fishing, looking for like a bass or a warm water specific line, you're going to want to look for something that can handle the heat from medium to high. And typically that's described as like a tropic line, a line you would see in Florida, in Georgia, Texas, fish in the Alabama coast, you know, Louisiana, something that has a harder jacket material that can withstand a 90 degree boat deck in 85 degree water. So Yeah, in short, that's kind of what you're looking for, something that is labeled a tropic or a warm / hot environments.
Now, tell me too, like I know trout are, from what I've heard and from what I've seen, the little bit of fishing that I'm doing, like you're talking about a pretty wary, picky fish. You know, they talk about selective trout and you're throwing little bitty, teeny tiny imitations. Subtlety is not really usually the name of the game when you're going after bass and panfish. Is there anything about a warm water line that changes, like when it comes to like line taper or line weight or anything like that?
You know, traditionally, saltwater fishing, warm water fishing, entails longer casts and longer presentations. So, for example, if I'm trout fishing up here in central New York, or I'm fishing, you know, in the Midwest, and I'm on a river that's 30 feet wide, 40 feet wide, flowing at 500-600 CFS, cubic feet per second, you're typically not casting more than 30 to 60 feet. Because everything you're doing is either target based, or you're going in a drift boat, or you're blind casting out in front of you into like the deepest part of the hole, or you're picking apart a riffle, where you know there's fish suspended and up against the rock. So, with warm water fishing, you're thinking skiffs, you're thinking bass, you're thinking lakes, bigger river systems. You're typically either sight fishing, where you're actually seeing a target out at a distance, or you're just blind casting and covering as much water as possible. So with warm water lines, specifically, you know, like saltwater, warm water as well, you have these longer heads, which are meant to hold more line above your head. So what I mean by a head is the head is the part of the fly line that is transferring all the energy of your cast into the leader itself. So the shorter the head, the more compact the head, the easier it is to throw that line behind you and get some momentum going and shoot line, which has a purpose. But typically, if you have a longer headed line, it's more stable in the air. So when you know, on a windy day, or you're really trying to shoot 80, 90 feet of line at a target, or you're blind casting, it lets you throw up 40, 50 feet of line over your head. So you're not shooting as much. You have more control. So that's kind of the main difference. You do see some warm water lines, like we just came out with a line called the Tropic All-Purpose XP. And that's a 26-foot overweighted head. That line is designed for minimal casting. So minimal false casting, you throw it behind you, you throw it back, you throw it behind you. And then on that second rip, you should have enough momentum and hopefully you have a target where the line is below your reel. It's all stacked up on the ground and it shoots. Whereas, you know, so that would be like a really great line for fishing, for example, like Louisiana redfish, where you need something that just gets out and quick. You have a shot. It's within, you know, 15 to 40 feet away. Get your line out there, get your fly in front of that fish. Whereas if you were fishing in, say, Florida, where the fish are way spookier, they are, you know, way more onto you than they are in other locations, you're going to want a line that lands softer, more gradual, that isn't as aggressive. So typically those lines aren't overweighted. They're a true aft standard weight, and they have a longer taper. So if you need to hit that spooky fish from 50, 60, 70 feet, you can do so without spooking it. Whereas like if I was trying to hit a target at 70 feet with a 26-foot head, I'm basically ripping and shooting and praying that I picked the correct distance. There's very little control in terms of just, you know, accuracy and pinpoint hitting your target. It's just not as easy when you have a really short, compact head, you know, hitting a target that distance. But it's really easy to fish. So for like bass anglers, like our new bass line that we just came out with, it's kind of like a middle long head. It's 36 feet. But the difference with our line is a lot of that bulk, a lot of the mass in the fly line is in the first 15. So you're getting that quick load. So if you're fishing off boat, you're fishing, you know, banks, you're going to be able to load that line quickly, but you do have some room where if you're fishing a big body of water, you can throw back 45 feet and lay out 100 feet of it, no problem. But really the taper comes into play big time, and the taper is really everything about the presentation. Every fly line has a unique taper. It's kind of like making a cake based off of the taper of the fly line, whether it's a, you know, a short head, a long head, a short front taper, a long front taper. It's really going to determine how well that line turns over certain sizes of flies, but also how well it just how soft or how hard it lands on the water.
Is there a difference between like cold water sinking lines versus warm water sinking lines? Does it just come back to a different type of polymer that's designed to function in a certain temperature, or is it different for, like, you know, do y'all design it in mind for different depths, or for, like, I know down here with bass, like a lot of times you're fishing really, really big streamers. Is there anything that is different there?
You know, really from warm water to cold water for sinking lines, not really. The only difference is the blend of PVC that we use in the line to control the stiffness. So, you know, like baking a cake, depending on how much sugar you put in there, that's how sweet it's going to be. So the stiffer the PVC material you use in the fly line, the more resistant to heat it's going to be. Same thing goes with sinking lines. And the big thing with sinking lines is density is grain weight does not equal density. So what that means is the density of the line, every line, whether it's a zero weight or a 12 weight, if it's an intermediate density, if it's a sink four density, a sink six density, that is referring to the rate at which it's going to fall below the surface. So like a type four means 4 to 5 inches per second. If that line weighs 500 grains or it weighs 300 grains, if it's type four, it's going to sink at the same rate. So really it just depends on what situation you're going to be in terms of how fast you need to get down. One of the new bass lines we just released, the Bass Intermediate, it has 26 feet of intermediate. And we found that intermediate material sinks at, you know, 1.5 to 2 inches per second. It's a really versatile rate where, you know, if you let it sit you cast out to the bank, you let it sit for 10 seconds. Yes, you will get down to, you know, 8 to 10 feet. But if you alter the fly and you put a weighted fly on there, you're going to help get that line down a little quicker because that fly is going to start to suck that line down with the density. So really no difference between warm water and cold water. It really all comes down to just the stiffness of the PVC that's being used for the end result.
What about when it comes down to warm water leaders? I know the leaders is kind of a component in your line equation. Are there any particular recommendations you can make for leaders, especially when it comes to turning over? I know I continually struggle getting a good presentation and a good turnover with, like, a lot of your bass poppers, like your heavy, you know, rubber legs, big foam or cork bodies. Like, those are to me more difficult to throw than some of your dry flies. Is there anything that changes about your leader that you'd recommend?
So you're going to want to use a stiffer leader material. So the same thing with, you know, the PVC, a stiffer line for warm weather, you're going to want to do the same thing with the leader. So a lot of, you know, traditional saltwater leaders or, you know, like our bass leaders, they have a stiffer blend of nylon or fluorocarbon that is meant to help have a positive turnover. Because if you use, say, like a supple dry fly leader that's meant to land soft and land delicate on a long front taper, small dry fly, if you use that exact same leader taper for, you know, a big deer hair popper, the line, it's just going to collapse on itself and you're going to be fighting that all day. So absolutely, I recommend you look for a stiffer nylon material, typically like hard mono. That's like the same thing, like a hard mono material. You'll see like the difference if you ever bought one of our bass leaders or you bought one of our trout leaders, you know, just taking the coil of the leader and squeezing it together, you'll feel the resistance on a warm water leader versus how flexible a supple trout leader is.
It seems like warm water fly fishing has gotten more popular, especially since the pandemic. Seems like fly fishing is getting more and more popular down here in the Southeast. With more people getting into it, I know you've mentioned that you're coming out with some new bass lines and stuff like that, but has that kind of push forward in warm water fly fishing, has that driven any new innovations or new technologies that people may not be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been making fly lines for over 100 years, and we've always had a collection of warm water lines in the assortment for bass, redfish, tarpon, you name it. So in the most recent years, we've absolutely seen the growth in that space. And I love it, first of all, because it allows someone to get into the sport of fly fishing without the pressure of making a perfect cast, making a perfect drift, matching the presentation style of a a cripple blue winged olive that's coming down the tailwater where the trout's already seen, you know, 50 anglers that day. Warm water fly fishing really lets somebody get out there and fail, but find success. You know, you don't have to be a perfect caster to get into warm water fishing. Same thing goes with pike, muskie. You know, it's really about being out there, putting the time in, and getting rewarded eventually once you cross paths with that fish. But in terms of innovation, one of the new things that we incorporated in the bass line, and Peter Jordan helped a ton with this, is we incorporated a supple braid core with a hard PVC jacket. So what we're doing is we're doing best of both worlds. Bass anglers that are fishing early morning, sunset, in that like 40, 50, 60 degree water temp, that braid core is going to remain supple. It's not going to coil up on them. It's not going to be a pain knotting up. But the moment that heat starts to crank up as the day goes on, that PVC jacket's going to remain stiff, fast shooting, and easy to handle. So I would say like that was one of my favorite innovations of the last few years, of just finding that blend of polymers to make that line do what it needs to do. But so far from my testing, having this kind of like, I don't know how to say it, like a not unique, just like this like dual temp line. I think bass anglers all around the country are going to absolutely love it, because, you know, everyone thinks of bass. They think heat, heat, heat. Well, I know your mornings are not 95 degrees. And 6 a.m., 7 a.m., sunrise, over lily pads throwing frogs, it can absolutely be in the low 60s. And that is not a tropic situation. You do not want a tropic line for that. So having this line with the dual weather-resistant kind of core coating, I think is going to be huge for anglers.
Yeah, I think definitely, like I've seen that firsthand, the need for the ability to work in both scenarios. Last summer, I was doing some fishing, and you could, in the lake house we were staying at on Lake Martin, I jumped off in the water at one point for a swim off the dock and immediately crawled back out. And when I turned on the depth finder on my buddy's boat, the surface temperature was like 92 degrees that afternoon. But then you could get up in the morning and you could drive up river and get on some of the little spring fed creeks feeding into the Tallapoosa, which feeds into Lake Martin. And when you got into deeper moving water, spring fed, like you said, it totally different, like water that was cold enough that you didn't want to be in it, you know. So you had both extremes. You had water so cold that you kind of weren't happy about wet wading it. Then you had water that was so hot that you jumped in it to cool off and you felt like a crawfish that done fell in a pot. It definitely, there's a lot of transitional areas, I guess, where you can experience different temperature extremes for sure, especially here in the Southeast. It's interesting to hear that Peter had a hand in that. I'll have to Don't let him get too big for his britches now if he starts thinking too much of himself. Remind him that he's from Selma, Alabama. He's just a redneck like the rest of us.
Yeah, the other thing that Peter, you know, that with that core change, so traditionally, warm water fly lines have a mono core because mono holds more memory and it's easier for it to remain stiff versus a braid core. Kind of, you know, like anyone's experience with braid versus mono, like braid's very soft. But the other reason that we're really excited about the braid core for like the topwater guys in that floater, if you're fishing structure, you're fishing lily pads, and you're fishing for the real bass. I mean, you're fishing for the 4 to 6 to 7 pounders, the ones that rarely get caught. And when you trick them on a fly, you absolutely do not want to lose them. That braid core has virtually zero stretch. So the moment you get that nice eat that you've been waiting for up against that log, you just hammer that line, and as long as you're fishing thick enough leader to handle the situation, that leeway that the bass typically used to have with a monocore that stretches is out the window. And that's, you know, something that I think is absolutely going to help anglers land some larger bass this season.
For sure. Yeah, I know. I haven't had much luck fooling them big bass like you talk about, but Peter, he does it all the time. And it's definitely different down here, bass fishing versus trout fishing. You know, you don't see much 5, 6, 7X tippet and five weight rods down here. It's a very different game fishing for bass up in the lily pads.
I mean, I know from just fishing the lily pads up here with my conventional rods, like the difference between me messing around with 15 pound braid, throwing top water in the pads, just because that's the rod I have in my hand and I want to do it at sunset. The catch rate with that versus like a 40, 50 pound braid, I mean, it's like 3 to 1 from like losing fish to actually landing them through the lily. So I think that, yeah, the upsized break core on that bass line is going to help a ton.
Well, Richard, I've really enjoyed talking with you, and I've learned a lot. And I'm glad that Peter hooked us up so we could make an interview happen. If folks are interested, if they want to learn more kind of about what y'all are doing with those warm water fly lines, those new products, where's a good place they can learn more?
Yeah, so our website, CortlandLine.com, we have some really awesome blogs that have been done by some of our friends, ambassadors, pros, guides all across the world. And Peter actually has one on the website where he talks about his bass fishing, fly fishing techniques, and some just a really unique perspective about the sport of fly fishing for bass. So yeah, definitely check it out. CortlandLine.com. On the top bar, you'll see a media tab, and we got a podcast. We got blogs coming out every Thursday, and there's a whole bunch of good content to read up on there if you're ever interested in learning more about something new.
There we go. Well, folks listening in, y'all be sure to go check it out. And Richard, again, I appreciate you being on the show today, sir.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Nick.
This week's episode has been brought to you by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. If you own a pond or lake anywhere in the Southeast, Southeastern Pond Management can evaluate the health of your pond and then work with you individually to put together the right plan to get what you want out of your body of water. Through electrofishing, liming, fertilizing, and stocking and weed control, Southeastern Pond Management is the one-stop shop to help you produce more healthy trophy fish than ever before. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or email info@southeastpond.com. And brought to you by Texas Hunter. Texas Hunter Products is celebrating 70 years of engineering the highest quality outdoor products in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality, dependability, and durability. Their premium standards have earned the trust of generations of anglers, hunters, and outdoor enthusiasts across the country. Texas Hunter directional fish feeders feature patented technology and are among the highest rated in the industry. With multiple capacities available and deployment options for shorelines or docks, Texas Hunter has the fish feeder for any lake or pond. You can trust that Texas Hunter products will meet your needs for generations to come. Learn more at texashunter.com. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Get you that free AFCO Sun Protection Mask promo code and get added to our email list so that we can send you the new show each week. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by the Alabama Fishing Show. The all-new Alabama Fishing Show is coming to Gadsden, Alabama, March 8th through the 10th at the venue on Coosa Landing at George Wallace Drive. Buy your tickets now, alabamafishingshow.com. Proudly brought to you by Monster Marine. And brought to you by Hilton's Real-Time Navigator, bringing you the highest quality online satellite fishing charts since 2004. Your source for sea temps, allometry, currents, and water color at hiltonsoffshore.com. Also by Mallard Bay. Book your next guided hunting or fishing trip with thoroughly vetted guides or charters. Plan trips, buy gear, go experience. MallardBay.com. Also brought to you by Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks manufacture a variety of metal roofing systems to meet your needs. Whether you're putting a new roof on your home or sheeting a commercial building, they have you covered. Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, your metal roofing headquarters.